This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, this is Greg Buttle, and you're listening to the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN. That's right. It used to be the Buttle Show, but now it's the K. Show.
Thank you, Greg, and a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Friday, May 27th, 2022. Michael K., Don LaGreca, we're apart, but we're together for the next 4 hours, and the other 20, and then the other 48, and then the other 24. That's your responsibility as we start the Memorial Day weekend, the official beginning of summer. Hope everybody has great weekend plans.
Yeah.
No, you don't?
Well, just this weather is not cooperating, at least tonight and tomorrow. But it looks like Sunday and Monday are going to be good.
All right. Okay.
Well, Ranger fans hoping that there's, you know, something happening Monday night. There's certainly something happening on Saturday night. But hopefully the weather cooperates here.
Things are happening tonight.
I got a festive shirt on. I'm ready. Are
now,
you?
I'm ready. I'll be here in Tampa. I walked about 6 blocks today to get to a Walgreens so I could buy some decongestant.
Oh, no.
And I must have sweated off about 12 pounds. Good workout.
What, you got allergies?
I always have to take Allegra Day, but I do have to show my license and wait 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's something.
Yeah, but I can get an AR-15 very easily, especially down here. Anyway, Rangers didn't show up yesterday, Don. 17 shots on goal, that's not showing up. And, you know, we were talking moments ago on our pre-show meeting, which should be on the air, so good. I'll tell you what, That doesn't distinguish them at all, the way they played yesterday, Don. That's not the way you're playing a game that you really have to have.
No, it was humbling. It was. And as excited as you were after game 4, the way they played and they dominated, you're thinking, hey, they can do this. They really can do this. But then you go right back to what had happened in the first 2 games of the series, especially game 2, where there's no room and the matchups don't work and Gallant changes the lines up, but you get 17 shots on goal.
How's Michael, that possible, Don?
They were down 2-1 in the third. So you figure, all right, Carolina's going to go into their shell, and then the Rangers should at least get some chances against Ranta. No, they didn't. They got nothing. Lafreniere, I looked it up because I track it during during a game for the post. At the 10-14 marks, midway through the third period, Lafreniere had a shot on goal. The Rangers did not get another shot on goal until they pulled the goaltender with 2 minutes left. They got 2 in that flurry at the end of the game after it was already over. Once Svechnikov scored on that breakaway with 7 minutes to go, game was over. You didn't feel like the Rangers were going to get a goal, never mind 2. So how are you supposed to score and win when you're just generating nothing? I mean, Chris Kreider's a 52-goal scorer. 52 goals. That's no fluke. 52, that's a lot of goals. Rangers have only had how many guys do it in their history, right? Jágr, Vic Hatfield and Adam Graves, right? He's the fourth Ranger to ever do it. And he's had 1 shot on goal in Raleigh. 3 games, 1 shot on goal. Zibanejad had 2 shots on goal. The goal on the power play, and then just 1 the rest of the way. So 5-on-5, they create 0. Nothing. No room. And, of course, they make a mistake, give up the shorthanded goal. They come back and tie it on the power play. And they didn't catch a break on the Strome goal, but clearly Kopp was offside, so you can't really complain about it. But then that's it. You got to generate more than that. There's too many talented offensive players. So even if they win tomorrow, Michael, do you feel like they're going to go back and figure it out in Game 7?
No, you don't. And you know, Rick DiPietro just sent me this pretty impressive nugget. The Rangers had 1 high danger scoring chance. I mean, are you kidding me? Does Carolina have that great and stout a defense that you can't get shots off?
Well, it's, again, that last line change. We talked about it, you know, all day yesterday, and they just can't free up Zibanejad. But Michael, you can't be cute. You got to figure out ways. There's world-class players. Artemi Panarin didn't have a shot on goal. He's Artemi Panarin at 96 points during the regular season. You know, he's one of the most talented players in the National Hockey League, and I know he saved their bacon in Game 7 on the power play, and he gets his points on special teams, but I'm sorry, you got to generate something 5-on-5, and that's been a problem all year with this team. They've got to be able to find a way to generate more offense, and they'll do it tomorrow because they'll be able to get the last line change, and the crowd will energize them, but How do you feel like they're going to be able to find a way in Game 7? You just hope there is going to be that opportunity.
No, but, I'm going to put you on the spot, though, Don.
Yes.
Because I'm reading through Twitter when I got back to the hotel room, and a lot of people are saying that Gallant got out-coached. Is that true? Did he get out-coached?
But what do you want him to do?
I don't know.
I mean, like, he changed the lines up again. Now could I don't know why Kako was nailed to the fourth line. I would have probably bumped him up. I don't know why Mott's got to play on the third line. He knows better than I do. Maybe there's something going on with Kako. Maybe he's frustrated with his game beyond what we can see. But I thought at times early in the series he was one of their best players. But they put Hedl on the top line with Zibanejad and Kreider. And then they move Lafreniere on with Strome and Panarin. He's changing the lines up. He's trying to find a combination. But when I see Filip Hedl drive into the zone between the circles, instead of taking a shot, a blind pass to his wing that never connects. So it's got to fall on these players to be the players that they were for the majority of the season. And what's scary to think, and again, they're a year early. So what you're maybe seeing is, are they ready for this? Like, in isolated moments, they're one of the best teams in the National Hockey League, but Carolina's a cup contender. Or maybe the Rangers aren't yet. Because that's the type of game, Michael, where, I'm sorry, you got to give me more than that. Now, Carolina was the better team, but they just didn't look like they were ready for that type of moment. Now, they've got experienced guys like, you know, Kreider's been to a Stanley Cup final, and Mott's played, Braun's played over 100 games in the playoffs. But as a collective, they just didn't look like they were ready for that moment. And the first round's the first round. First round's almost an extension of the regular season, right? I mean, Pittsburgh's a good team, but they're not Carolina. And you saw the Rangers struggle and have to come back from 3-1 down. And I'm not going to pronounce them dead just yet. But last night, Michael, they just didn't look like they were ready for this moment. And hopefully they're learning from it, and they'll be better from it next year. But when I hear Gallant say they look tired? We're not even halfway through the playoffs yet.
See, that's the comment that bothered me, Don. You're tired?
Yeah.
Well, what happens if you win the series? You still have two more to win the Stanley Cup. So you're not even built to win the Stanley Cup. If you're tired in game five of the second round, what an indictment to the team.
Dave said it during the broadcast in the third period. And I'm like, oh, that's something for Dave to say. But, you know, Dave's there. Dave's a former player. He knows. And then Gallant echoed it in the postgame. And I'm thinking, well, you're not going to get any rest. You're playing tomorrow. You got to get on a flight to Raleigh if you're fortunate enough to win. Play again on Monday. And, oh, by the way, I believe the conference final will probably start on Wednesday. Tampa's been waiting for a week. So you're not going to get a rest here. And we're not even halfway through. So do I think it's a physical exhaustion, or is it the mental exhaustion of realizing that it takes a lot more than just throwing out there and playing hard to expect to win? Pittsburgh, they were better than Pittsburgh. You know, Pittsburgh's at the end of their run. But Carolina is a cup contender. Tampa is a cup contender. You can see it. You see the way that they play. And maybe the Rangers just right now, as a collective, are not at that level yet, that if it takes this kind of physical exertion just to be able to produce offense, then maybe there's still a lot left to learn with this team.
Yeah. I wonder, you know, we talk about this a lot when, you know, especially in basketball, they wanted it more. They had higher energy, and that, you know how that galls me, because the one thing you can control is effort. You think it was just an excuse, or do you really believe that they were tired? I mean, for Gallant to say they were tired, well, again, an incredible indictment.
He said they looked tired. Now, looking tired, yeah, they did look tired. You had 17 shots on goal. You were beaten, it seemed like, in every war on the boards. And, Carolina doesn't want it more, but maybe they know how to play in these situations. And when they get that final line change, Brendan Moore is a heck of a coach. But, you know, Gallant took a team to a Stanley Cup, an expansion team, no less. So you can't tell me that Gallant's not a great coach. But the players have to go out there and execute and find room, find space, take advantage of whatever opportunities there are. I didn't notice too many mistakes from Carolina, but you can't tell me they played a perfect game. But I noticed the Rangers' mistakes. You know why? Because when there was a mistake, it ended up in the back of their net. So give Carolina a lot of credit for that. But they're going to have to figure out a way. I'm sure they'll be energized by the crowd. I don't see any reason why Game 6 would be any different than 3 and 4. But when you start thinking about winning this series, when you start thinking about what it takes to win two more of these suckers to win a cup, you realize that maybe they're not ready for prime time yet.
Now, Game 6, it's really for the season. I mean, you either win or you go home if you're the Rangers.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a lot of energy in the Garden, and we want to tell Ranger fans to listen up. We're giving you four chances today to be at Game 6. That's tomorrow at Madison Square Garden. So coming up in this hour, the 4 o'clock hour, the 5 o'clock hour, and the 6 p.m. hour, be ready to call in, and you could be there to see your blue shirts in action. The Rangers are in round 2 of the Stanley Cup playoffs, and MSG Networks has you covered. Watch pre- and post-game coverage with highlights, analysis, and exclusive team access before and after every playoff game. And I've got to give credit to our company. I really do. They have really stepped up. And, you know, they buy these tickets to give them away. It's not like, you know, some kind of an exchange. So they know how much this means to a lot of our listeners, how much they like to be there. So every hour you get a chance to win a pair of Ranger tickets. And I think the Garden crowd is going to be electric tomorrow, Don. There's no other way to describe it. It's going to be electric because it's for everything.
Here's what I would say. It feels like a gut punch. But look at go back to how you felt after game 4. So that could happen again after game 6. So they're not dead by any stretch, and you just hope that they can learn from what happened last night. But you can't feel great about them winning the series, but they're still alive. And right now there's only 6 teams left, right? St. Louis is still hanging on by a thread. They're going to play their game 6 tonight at home against Colorado. So, listen, they deserve to be where they are, and they're still alive, and they still have a pulse. And if anything, this team has shown you they can come back. They had the second most comebacks in the regular season, 27. They came back from 3-1 down against Pittsburgh, so they should be used to this, and I expect them to win tomorrow and force a game 7. But, Michael, come on, the 3 games that you saw in Raleigh, something different has to happen in game 7. You can't just always rely on the other team, you know, feeling the pressure, the other team choking. They've got to figure some way to produce more offensively if they do have the privilege of playing in a game 7 on Monday.
Yeah, I was thinking about in my lifetime, star players, I mean, superstar players that just don't show up in the playoffs. I mean, because Panarin, I know he had that Game 7 goal against Pittsburgh, but he hasn't shown up. This is a star. As you said, one of the stars in hockey. You know, I look at it. How many times does that happen? Winfield didn't show up in the 1981 World Series, didn't show up. 0 for like 22 before he got a hit. I mean, how many people have just laid an egg like this? And, a couple of Ranger fans that I know, friends of mine, have said, you watch, once the playoffs are over, we're going to find out there was something wrong with him. Because there's no way that he could be this bad if there wasn't something wrong with him.
Maybe. Maybe we'll find that out. You know there's something wrong with Lindgren. You know, right. You saw his injury, but yet he's out there playing, had a couple assists the other night. Michael, everybody's feeling it. You know, so you're going to see when the season's over, whenever a team gets eliminated, you find a laundry list of guys who are going in for surgery. You found out they were playing with a partial tear of their ACL. They were playing with some kind of broken bone in their foot or whatever. So, hey, is it possible? But he's out there. He's playing. All right? He's on the second line. He's one of their top players. He plays almost the full 2 minutes on the power play. So he's out there. He's giving his effort. I think it's more of a question of he has to figure out a way to find some room. You know, the regular season's different. Yeah, they don't match up lines in the regular season like they do in the playoffs.
Don, excuse my ignorance on this. What's his track record in postseason games?
I was just going to look it up to give – there's not a ton of experience there.
Maybe that's an issue.
But I think there's enough. I mean, he's a good enough player, Michael. I'm just going to give you his stats. I'm going to punch them up for you in the postseason. But, you know, his career playoffs, he's got – 42 games played, 37 points, 13 goals, 24 assists.
So it's not like he doesn't show up.
3 power play goals, but, you know, 15 of his 37 points in the postseason have come on the power play. You know, so almost not quite half of his points. So it just comes down to, you know, 5-on-5 and what you got to do when you're not on the special teams. So maybe he is nursing an injury, but – got to get more. Got to get more from Kreider. I love Chris Kreider. He's a stand-up guy. I think he's the future captain of this team. But one shot on goal in 3 games on the road, that's not going to get it done. You know, the Strom goal changed a lot. But, again, 17 shots overall. No shots for Vetrano. 2 shots for Zibanejad. None for Kreider. None for Panarin. Not what you want, Bob.
Well, line up the calls. We'll get to them in a moment. I want to tell you about Game Time, brought to you by Tullamore-Dew Irish Whiskey. Yankees game 2 of their 4-game set against the Rays tonight. This one starts at 7:10. You can see it on Prime Video. The Mets are on Channel 11 tonight.
On TV.
Weather permitting.
The complete
Mets against
opposite.
The Phillies.
the polar opposite of television coverage.
And by the way, everybody, for all you Met fans out there, we have Buck Showalter.
There you go.
At 5 o'clock today. So that's cool. We'll talk to Buck about the hot start by his team. And at 4:30, we'll talk to my broadcast partner, who has a new book out with Jack Curry. Paul O'Neill will join us at 4:30. So that's Game Time, brought to you by Tullamore Dew Irish Whiskey. During the big games this season, enjoy a Tullamore Dew, the original triple blended, triple distilled, and triple cask matured Irish whiskey. Remember, when it's game time, it's Tully time. Please enjoy responsibly. All right, let's go to the phones, see what you have to say. We'll start with Ron. He is way out in Delaware. Ronnie, what's up?
Delaware.
Hey, how are you today? How are you doing?
Good. How you doing?
Good. Fine. Thank you. Basically, you talk about Panarin, which is true. But Chris Kreider has turned into Claude Rains, better known as the Invisible Man. He doesn't forecheck. He doesn't carry the puck. All he does is that weak wrist shot once he goes inside the blue line. He's a horrible playmaker, and he doesn't come back to play defense. If he wants to wear that C, he's going to have to do a lot more than what he's been doing so far.
Don, well, you agree with that?
He's not a playmaker per se. You know, he's a winger that got the most of his goals standing in front of the net on deflections. So I'm not sure it's his job to do that. I mean, I called a bunch of games. I think he's a much harder worker than he's been in the past, and I do think he's a leader. He takes responsibility. He's really important in that dressing room. So I think you're being a little hard on him as far as, you know, why he couldn't be the captain. But I can't disagree that more has to happen there. I mean, a 52-goal scorer can't go out there and have one shot on goal in three games on the road. Now, he's not a playmaker, Michael. He had, what, 70? He had 25 assists. He's a goal scorer. He's going to get his goals on deflections. The guys that are supposed to make things happen are the Zibanejads of the Panarins of the world and the Stroms of the world that make things happen, find guys that are open. But I think he's working hard. He's getting shut down. And nobody took more responsibility in the postgame, Michael, than him. So I think he is captain material. But still, got to do more.
Let's go to Derek in Bergenfield. Derek.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Good.
Good, Derek.
I just like to point out that I think the Rangers are a season ahead of schedule because everybody seems to forget that the Islanders falling apart this year completely and totally changed the dynamic of that division. If you were to compare this season to anything else, this looks like the Giants when they went on that first miracle Super Bowl run. All we wanted was a win in Tampa Bay. Everything else was a miracle. All we wanted this year was to win in Pittsburgh. Anything else you get after this is a bonus.
Oh, there's there's no question that they are ahead of schedule. And what you're seeing, and especially saw last night, that maybe they're not ready for this, and that Kakko's and Lafreniere's and Hedl's are going to learn from this. But Kreider's a pro, man. Kreider's been here a decade. You know, and he's not going anywhere. They gave him a contract extension. Zibanejad could be better. Panarin could be better. So these guys are supposed to have the experience. These guys are supposed to be carrying the team. When they talk about the inexperience on this team, Michael, I really don't have a problem with the Millers and the Foxes and the Lafreniere's and, for the most part, the Kakko's and Hedl's of the world. But the guys that are supposed to be the experienced guys, the guys that are their leaders, the experienced ones, they're the ones that are coming up short to me in these games, especially these losses.
The one thing that worries me when you say ahead of schedule, remember the 2017 Yankees? They got to the seventh game of the American League Championship Series. They were ahead of schedule. All those young players, they haven't been back.
No.
When you have a chance, you got to grab it. You can't just say we're ahead of schedule. You got to readjust the schedule. You go this far. There's no guarantee you're going to go this far again. The team might be different next year. So I'm wary of that. They're ahead of schedule. But you're here now. Get it done.
No, but true. But you have to look at, like, Carolina's been there and done that, right? I mean, they haven't won, but they've been a consistent playoff team that has gone. They've won playoff series, and you can see they're a little bit more seasoned. Certainly Tampa Bay, too, that would be waiting for them in the next round. They've won back-to-back cups. So it does take time, Michael, to get to that level. And you learn from losing. You learn from the experience. This team hadn't gone to the playoffs the last 5 years. And now they're there for the first time in a while, so it might take a little time, and you'd hope to learn from this. So, yeah, I understand you got to take the advantage of the opportunities when they happen, but at the same time, you've got to learn from these experiences. Now, if next year they're in this situation and the exact same thing happens, well, then there's a problem. But can we really overall kill them for playing in Game 6 and possibly going to a Game 7 of the second round of the playoffs?
Well, I don't think you kill them, but I don't think you give them a pass because, you know, I mean, I can hear it in your voice. You're disappointed in the way they played yesterday.
Yeah.
So they can play better. So you can't just say, well, you know what, they're ahead of schedule. Yay, it's a victory. No. No moral victories.
No, but you hope you learn from this.
Yep.
All right, now you got the now you know what it's like. You know, and it's an old, tired story, but listen, people have memories like goldfish, and we have new audience all the time. When the Edmonton Oilers lost to the Islanders, the Islanders won their fourth straight Stanley Cup, Edmonton lost, and Wayne Gretzky was they're walking out of the building, and they had to pass the Islanders locker room, and they didn't see a team celebrating. They saw a team icing themselves down and exhausted. And Wayne Gretzky turned and told all of his players, that's what we have to do. We have to kill ourselves. We thought we were doing the right thing, but then they realized there was still more to give. There was still more to do. And then the next dynasty was born. So sometimes you got to learn from that. And maybe they'll realize, all right, we thought we were given our all. We thought we did everything we needed to do. And we'll learn from this. And then next year, if given the opportunity, boy, we're going to take advantage of it. But we don't have a crystal ball. We don't know what's going to happen next year.
All right, we'll continue to take your phone calls. Remember, we're giving away a pair of Ranger tickets to tomorrow's Game 6 at the Garden every single hour, including this one. We have Paul O'Neill coming on at 4:30, and we have the manager of the New York Mets, Buck Showalter, coming on at 5. So it's a big show, big Memorial Day weekend. Hope you enjoy it with your friends and your family, and that if you're stuck in traffic today, traveling to wherever you might be traveling, keep it right here. We'll try to entertain you. That we promise. Kay LaGreca and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Hey, buddy. Hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Michael Kay Show.
Rangers didn't show up yesterday. 17 shots on goal. That doesn't distinguish them at all, the way they played yesterday. That's not the way you play in a game that you really have to have.
It was humbling. And as excited as you were after Game 4, the way they played and they dominated, you're thinking, hey, they can do this. They really can do this. But then you go right back to what had happened in the first two games of the series, especially Game 2, where there's no room and the matchups don't work and Gallant changes the lines up, but you get 17 shots on goal. They were down 2-1 in the third. So you figure, all right, Carolina's going to go into their shell, and then the Rangers should at least get some chances against Ranta. No, they didn't. How are you supposed to score and win when you're just generating nothing?
The Michael Kay Show.
Maybe there's still a lot left to learn with this team.
On 98.7 ESPN.
All right, this portion of the Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Superbook Sports. Superbook Sports is live in New Jersey. Visit superbook.com for all the latest odds and promotions. Have a problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. All right, so the Rangers lose Game 5. Mets didn't play last night, and the Yankees won 7-2. So they continue to have the best record in baseball. Their lead over Tampa Bay is now 5 games in the loss column. And the gift that just keeps giving. Nestor Cortez, 8 shutout innings. Now, they actually allowed him to try to get the complete game. He gave up a single to Franco. They took him out. That run eventually scored because Peralta didn't cover first base. Okay, all well and good. 8 innings, 4 hits, 1 run. And I don't think it's hyperbolic to say, Don, it's really one of the best stories in baseball right now. This guy, a 36-round draft pick that's been released by 2 teams, is now in the conversation for being one of the best pitchers in baseball. Now, does that mean he has the most talent? No. But in terms of results, he's got an under 2 ERA. He's 4-1. He's given the Yankees 8 innings, 8 innings the last 2 times. That doesn't happen anymore. This guy is phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. A gift from the baseball gods for the Yankees. I don't know what else to say. He is just amazing. And you know, as I was coming to the ballpark today, I was starting to think, and it shows you how we have a preconceived notion of what a pitcher should be. I'm saying, gee, if all the Yankee starters were healthy and there was a 1-game wild card and they were all rested, all right, so unlikely, but That's the game we're playing. Who would you want to pitch the one-game playoff? And your mind still goes back to Gerrit Cole because he throws 100 miles an hour. But could you say, have somebody say, no, you're dead wrong if you say I'm going with Nestor Cortez?
But they wouldn't, though.
Let's say by the time that wild card game takes place, Don, he's 18-4 with a 1.75 ERA. Why wouldn't you?
Because you just – I'm with you. I mean, if you just went at the raw numbers, if he ends up having that kind of a special season, how could you not, right? But if Cole ends up being special too, that's what you got Cole for. Because – listen, Cortez, if he goes out there and wins 18 games this year, there's going to be a few that are going to be really big games that he pitches well in. But you don't know how he would be able to handle pitching in a wild card game, winner-take-all situation. You know, you don't know. And you also make decisions based on the post-game press conference, I think. Isn't it easier that if you lose with Cole that you went with your ace and the guy that's making all the money than if you went to Nestor Cortez and he lost?
But doesn't that spill into the same thing that we talk about with Chapman? Should Chapman be the closer because he makes $16 million and Clay Holmes makes however many, $3 million? No, you pick the best guy. Well, if Nestor is better than Gerrit Cole at that time, and I think Gerrit Cole's having a real good year, despite giving up 5 runs in 8 innings to the Orioles. I thought he pitched great in that game. But if he's better at the time, does it matter that Gerrit makes $36 million and Nestor Cortez makes $900,000?
All right, but the reason it's tough to compare it to Chapman is, you know, he's hurt and he's also not been effective. I'll say this. For Cortez to start that game, Michael, he has to be significantly better than Cole.
Yeah.
If it's even or even slightly better, they go to Cole. He has to be significantly better, meaning he wins 18 games and Cole wins 12. You know, Nestor's earn run average is a 2 and Cole's is a 3, then it's a different story. But if it's even close, they'll go with Cole.
I would agree. But I'm curious how you're viewing this because I see it every game. Are you as amazed as I am?
I'm shocked.
It's one of the great stories, man.
Here's why, and I didn't think it was Fugazi, but correct me if I'm wrong, Michael. A lot of the great things we saw last year and early this year were – he didn't give you a lot of innings.
Right.
And I was thinking, all right, this has been great, but I really want to see if he's going to give you innings. Then he flirts with a no-hitter, almost has a complete game yesterday. Now you're starting to see he's giving you innings, and the numbers haven't changed. So he's starting to win me over. Because what else does he have to do?
I said
just be the team that's chasing after you in their building.
Is there are no surprises anymore, Don. He's been one of the better pitchers in the game since the beginning of 2021. So all the tape is out there. All the scouts have looked at him. They all know what he's throwing, and they still can't hit him. So he's not fooling anybody or, like, sneaking up on anybody because they don't know who he is. Everybody knows who he is. Tampa Bay has scouted him to the nth degree, and they couldn't do anything with him. And John Flaherty made a good point on yesterday that he didn't even have good stuff the first two innings, but somehow did a little this, a little that, and got out of it, and then he found it. And from the second inning through the eighth, they couldn't touch him. They had no chance. So, I mean, it's funny, baseball, you spend all this money on pitching. You know, you make trades for Tyone, who's been great, and he's starting tonight. You 9-year, $36 million a year contract to Cole, and then you just find a diamond lying there in the sand. It's amazing.
You know, it's not an exact comparison, but it kind of reminds me of DeGrom in the sense that all we heard was about these great arms that the Mets had in their system. And you didn't hear much about DeGrom.
Right.
You know, it was hearing about Harvey, and before that it was who's the one they traded to San Francisco?
Wheeler.
Wheeler's coming, then Harvey's coming. It was like all this talking, and then DeGrom.
Got Wheeler from San Francisco.
Right, they got Wheeler from San Francisco. Then it was Wheeler.
The Beltran deal.
Right, for the Beltran deal. But there was Wheeler, and then it was Harvey, and then, you know, then DeGrom makes that start against the Yankees, and it was like, oh, he went 6 innings, scoreless innings, great job. And then the next thing you know, he's just like a superhero. And also, Michael, I think they liked what they got in the Syndergaard deal when they traded away R.A. Dickey, but then Syndergaard turned out, I think, to be even better than they thought. Like, yeah, it's crazy, right? That sometimes it's what you don't think. And And this is something the Yankees have not done. The Yankees have really not developed pitchers. Seems like they go out and acquire the pitchers. But this looks like one that ends with all the talk about the young pitchers that they did have. It ends up being Nestor Cortez out of nowhere.
But here's the amazing thing, Don. So we always talk about how smart people in baseball are. This guy's been released twice. Once by the Yankees and once by the Orioles. Twice. Now teams would cut off their pinky toe with a plastic fork to get this guy.
So what is it? What does he have now that he didn't have when the Yankees first caught him?
Well, the way he explains it was, you know, when you're in the minors, you don't make any money. Any money. So during the offseason, when other players are getting in shape, he went to the Dominican just to make money and pitch there. So last year, with the little success that he had, he said, you know what, I'm going to commit myself to getting in the best shape possible. And he did. He's throwing harder. He's learned, you know, what he is as a pitcher. And the fact that he's now, you know, 93 miles an hour and he's picked up a cutter, which is really an effective pitch, he's just transformed himself into a dominant pitcher. And he doesn't have dominant stuff. But boy, does it play faster than 93. Good for him. It's a great story. Great story. Now some more negative news for the Yanks.
Yep.
So we knew this was happening. So they transferred Chad Green to the 60-day IL, and that makes sense. He's not going to pitch this year. But this one is a little bit of a head-scratcher. So they transferred Josh Donaldson from the COVID-19 IL to the 10-day IL, retroactive to May 24th, with right shoulder inflammation. Now, he had been having a little difficulty throwing from third base, and he said that it was fine. But now, after being, you know, laid up with not COVID, but something close to COVID, he was coughing a lot and had a high temperature. Now he's on the IL with right shoulder inflammation. And none of this takes the Yankees by surprise, Don, because why else would they have signed Carpenter? I mean, they knew something was up because there's no room for Carpenter if Donaldson comes back. Now, and I'm still waiting on DJ.
So today, it's retroactive to the 24th. Today's the 27th, so he's still going to be out a week.
Yeah.
Well, that's why he's here, and Carpenter did well. Got on base.
And he looks just like the W.B. Mason guy.
I've heard W.B. Mason. I've heard Luigi from the Mario Brothers.
I've heard Daniel Day-Lewis in Let There Be Blood. And a late entry yesterday I got from a lot of people, Freddie Mercury.
Mm.
Strange. It's a strange looking.
There Will Be Blood was the name of the book.
What did I say?
Let There Be Blood.
Oh, Let There.
Still, it was. But, yeah, so he can also look like that, or he, Gangs of New York, I think, fit too. There's a lot going on there. But good for him. Back in the bigs. Get hit by a pitch. He walked too.
Scored two runs. Kids didn't know who he was. They're 5-6. They'd never seen him without a beard.
I know the Yankees don't get a lot of credit for this because they're supposed to win and they're supposed to be Goliath all the time. But just another example of having injuries and still finding ways to win. I know it's a little bit, Michael, because the injury started happening during the Baltimore series. They won the last two games of that series. Now, win the first game against Tampa, there's a lot of resiliency here. Everybody waits for the – it's weird because the organization does so well in the regular season, but like when the injuries come, it's like, oh, here it comes, and it never does.
Yeah, never seems to affect them.
Now,
remember the year they won 103? They were loaded with injuries, and they just kept winning.
They've had injuries, Michael, since, what, the last year of Girardi?
Mm-hmm.
I think every year with Boone, they've had significant injuries.
And then last year, they had their best stretch, if you remember.
Absolutely.
When everybody was out, and they played Andrew Velasquez and Tyler Wade.
That was during that 13-game winning streak.
Yeah, and that was none of the. And then when the regulars got back, they weren't as good. But that stretch got them into the playoffs. You know what I have here, right, Don?
I would think you have the Yankees lineup now.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, it's brought to you by Bigelow Tea and read by me. Center fielder is Aaron Judge leading off. No, yeah, I just made that up.
Oh, I like that.
First baseman Anthony Rizzo bat second. Hitting third, second baseman Gleyber Torres. Miguel Andujar is in left field cleaning up. Batting fifth, the DH. Luigi. Matt Carpenter. Batting sixth, the shortstop, Isaiah Kanafalefa. Right fielder is Joey Gallo. He'll bat seventh. Batting eighth, Kyle Higashioka, catching. And batting ninth, third baseman Marwin Gonzalez with Jameson Taillon on the mound. That's today's Yankee starting lineup, brought to you by Bigelow Tea. Bigelow Tea is a proud supporter of the Michael Kay Show and the official hot tea of Joe Torre and the New York Yankees. So, remember our interview yesterday with Aaron Boone, where he said he would have punched me in the face? Well, I was walking out of the hotel today to get to a Walgreens, and he stopped me. He and Mike Harkey were sitting together,
okay,
and he had the debate with me all over again. And he said, hey, Mike, it's just such a lazy take. I said, how's it lazy? I said, everybody that roots for the Yankees thinks that you rest them so much. He goes, and you think it too, and you just use that. You just use that as an excuse to ask me. I said, well, both Don and I think that if guys healthy, just keep playing them because they're going to get hurt anyway. He's just a dumb, lazy take. He goes, we know exactly what these guys can handle. Yeah, people are going to get hurt. He said, but they would get hurt more if we played them more. He said, we know what we're doing here. We're not just making it up as we go along.
Well, nobody is saying they don't know what they're doing. But I do think sometimes it just gets a little crazy with the analysis. Hey, if a guy's healthy, play him. And then if he starts to feel something, then you sit him down.
Yeah, they don't want him to feel something.
But it's hard to argue because he's just so defiant about it.
Oh, and then he took a swing at me and I ducked him and I hit him right in the gut and he went down. Mike Harkey picked him up.
Well, I think we would have heard about that before you just said.
Well, how would you have heard about that unless I tweeted it out? How would you have heard about it?
I don't know. Why do I feel like in this day and age there'd be video?
There's nobody on the streets here.
TMZ,
I could have walked
lurking
to Walgreens nude. Nobody would have seen me.
TMZ is always lurking.
I made that part up. He didn't take a swing.
I know you made it up, Michael. Because at least it would have made the show meeting.
Turning up the radio.
Sometimes Ray
I
Rowe.
Don't tell you what I'm going to say on the meeting because I want the real true reaction.
Listen, I'm the biggest hockey fan going. If that happened, that's our lead. And what are we doing? What are we doing?
Well, we're still friends, even though he took a punch.
Well, now it's happened again.
even if he took a swing.
Right,
now,
you
speaking
think
of the Rangers, Don.
Yes.
I want the Ranger fans to listen up. We're giving you a chance to be at Game 6 tomorrow night at Madison Square Garden. Be caller number 6 right now at 888-987-ESPN, and you could be there to see your blue shirts in action. We'll have another two chances to win coming up in the 5 and 6 p.m. hour, so keep it locked in. But one chance this hour, so also keep it locked in. Rangers are in round 2 of the Stanley Cup playoffs, and MSG Networks has you covered. Watch pre- and post-game coverage with highlights, analysis, and exclusive team access before and after every playoff game. What's that for?
I think it's great. I think what we're doing is great.
Let's go to Joe in East Syracuse. Joe.
Is there an East Syracuse?
Well, obviously Joe's from East Syracuse.
Yes, there is, Don.
Okay.
Yes, there is. I am a suburb of Syracuse, New York, Syracuse University. We are like one step over the line of Syracuse.
And it's actually called East Syracuse?
It is. We're the village of East Syracuse. Yes,
okay.
We are.
All right.
All
nice.
Right. What do you got, Joe?
I love you guys. Love the show. Huge Yankee fan since I came out of the womb. Nestor Cortez, and you guys are old enough to remember, he reminds me of Sparky Lyle. Do you guys remember Sparky? I know you
sure.
do.
Yeah, I don't see the
that
similarity.
That crafty left-hander that just you can't hit him. You know, that's what he reminds me of. And I'll get out of your way here, but just huge Yankee fan. I don't like being negative. This year, this team, I just think we got the feeling. It just feels like it might be that right year. Thanks, guys. Love the show. Well, talk to you.
You got it. I do not see the similarity at all to Sparky, other than that he's left-handed. Sparky threw, you know, one of the most vicious sliders of all time. I don't see it. I don't see it.
Well, they're lefty.
They're lefty.
They both had mustaches.
True. They're not the same. They don't really have the same body type, I don't think. No,
listen,
I don't
it was
see it.
It was a leap. And yeah. And now I wonder if there really is an East Syracuse.
Andrew, is there an East Syracuse?
Yes, there is.
Have you ever been there?
Yes, I have.
Is it a beautiful area or is it rough?
It was nice. I thought it was nice.
You ever take a young lady there on a date?
Yeah, I think there was a restaurant, Delmonico's, that was in East Syracuse. Amanda and I went there, one of our first dates.
Real? Look at that.
It's all coming together.
Did you,
now, do you see a similarity between Nestor Cortez and Sparky Lyle?
I heard that question, and yes, I definitely treated.
Good.
Yes.
And do you think that Sparky Lyle and Nestor Cortez remind you of each other?
I don't see it.
Okay, good. Let's go to Nick in Carteret. Nick.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Great. How are you?
I'm doing very good. Thank you. I have a question about Yankees' lead, their batting order, but I have a question, too, about camera angles and the shift, if you let me get to that after my
sure.
thing about my thought about the leadoff. What about IKF leading off? I mean, Judge is leading off now. When Aaron Hicks is healthy and he's leading off, he's not a good hitter. And when the batting order rolls over late in the game and you got your leadoff hitter coming up, I hate seeing Aaron Hicks come up in a clutch situation late in the game. What about IKF leadoff? And let me ask you another question after you respond.
I don't know if they think that he takes enough pitches. You know, he does jump on pitches early. They like to have the leadoff guy at least let the second, third guy see a lot of pitches. But I see
second.
What you're thinking. He gets on base, but he doesn't get on base a lot because he doesn't walk all that much. And he does steal bases. But
yes.
I don't know if they'll go that route, Nick.
All right. Well, the other thing I had, remember years ago, they used to, during the games, they used to show a lot of pitches from the center field cam, from behind home plate, looking out at center field.
Yes.
They don't do that very much, hardly at all anymore. And it's tough sometimes to tell where the shift is and even if there's a fourth outfielder. Is there a way that they could, like, pan the field when a new batter comes up so you actually know if there's four outfielders or if there's nobody on the left side of the infield? It's tough to tell.
I mean, we do have a camera. It's called the high home. In the old days, they used to have, like, really below, like, right at the, you know, field level. But those are expensive seats, so a lot of places don't have that. We do have a robotic camera on the screen. I don't think that a lot of directors like that look. I mean, we try to show every time there's four outfielders. I try to say it every time there's four outfielders. By the way, I had a brain cramp, by the way. I think Sparky threw a screwball, not a slider. I got to look it up, but I don't know why my brain is, like, not functioning right. I think it was a screwball. It's bothering me now.
Let me see. It was a little before my time. I do remember him, but I don't remember.
Oh, he was great. He won the Cy Young Award.
He was great, absolutely. And then, of course, longtime manager of the Somerset Patriots.
And leading to one of the great lines of all time. So, Sparky won the Cy Young Award in 1977. Then the Yankees signed Goose Gossage in 1978. And Greg Nettle said, yeah, he goes from Cy Young to Sayonara in 1 year.
That is a great line.
I think it was a screwball.
Either way, he's not Nestor Cortez.
No.
He's not.
No. Absolutely not. Paul O'Neill is going to join us in just a moment. I'm going to take one more phone call because somebody wants to compliment Don.
Let's go
to Greg in Rockland. Greg.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
You got it.
So first, real quick, I think it was maybe this time last year, maybe a little later in the season, but I bought the Nasty Nestor Super Mario-looking T-shirt with the big mustache and everything when he first started breaking out. And I'm loving this. He just seems like such a good guy. So this is just great to see. He's just really enjoying and embracing it, big smile on his face.
How could he not, right?
It's awesome.
Yeah.
But yeah, just quick point on the Rangers, but first, real quick, also – all the love that Don's getting. I remember it was about a month or two ago where, you know, compliments, why give the compliments, you know, what's the reason for it? No thank you fest and all that. So don't need the thank yous, all that. Just what I noticed going back to even like Doc Emmerich, Sam Rosen, a lot of the great, you know, hockey announcers have tone in their voice. And, you know, when things are heating up, the passion in the voice is heating up with it versus some announcers that are on maybe some of the Canadian networks are on right now. A lot of the Canadian answers are great, but a lot are just monotone. So, Don, you get into it, you sound awesome, and the tone of voice is there. So that's probably one of the biggest reasons that a lot of us really feel like we're watching the game, even if we're not. So,
Don, you could actually walk away now, Don. These are great compliments.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for everybody, all the kind.
I love these people.
He loves
these people. Paul O'Neill is going to join us in just a moment. Stick around for that. He has a new book out with Jack Curry. We'll talk a lot about the Yankees, more about the Yankees than the book, but he doesn't know that. Right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Some good news, by the way, on DJ LeMahieu. Meredith Marakovich reporting that LeMahieu took BP, and he said he's good to go. He's not in the starting lineup today. His wrist has been bothering him, had a cortisone shot, but he is good to go and expects to be in the lineup tomorrow and is a player today. Let's go to Rick in Fairfield, New Jersey. Rick.
Hi, Michael. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, good, good. Couple things. I'm kind of was listening to everything, and Nestor Cortez reminds you of two players. He looks a little like Louis Arroyo, and he pitches a little bit like Jimmy Key. He's quick. He doesn't waste time. He throws the ball over the plate.
Yeah, I think Jimmy might have, Rick, might have had better pure stuff. But the thing that makes Nestor so effective is he pitches to all four quadrants of the plate. So a hitter can't really say, okay, I'm going to protect the inside. I'll spin on the outside. He can go up and away, up and in. He can go down and away, down and in, all with effective stuff. And that's what makes him so effective. I don't know if there's a comparable for him. I mean, there might be comparables in the way his body type is, but the way he pitches, nothing has struck me yet, Don. Nothing has struck me yet.
No, it's very unique. I mean, I'm just trying to think of guys. I'm trying to remember. Now, Sid Fernandez threw a lot harder. Just trying to think of other lefties that are kind of comparable. Nothing really comes to mind. People are close, but nobody's really hit it yet.
Let's go to Michael in the Bronx. Michael.
How's it going, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
Just in reference to the last one, before I make my point, it kind of reminds me a little bit of Keuchel, like the year he won the Cy Young, not for his whole career, but just like perfect control, doesn't throw too hard, goes the ball over the plate and works fast, not afraid of contact and stuff like that. So that to me is like a good comp for him now.
Okay.
I was going to say, before I get to my main point, I wonder like Boone, I love Boone, but for the last couple of times, like he brought Cortez out, gets no one out, and then takes him out with one base runner, and with giving up a base hit. And he did the same with Montgomery when he gave up the home run with a reliever ready. If right. The reliever is ready, I don't understand why he doesn't go to him, because you have to get three outs anyway. And then my second point was with Cortez, you wonder if since Severino's innings might be limited, when the playoffs roll around, if they still have some bullpen woes, would they consider Severino to be a reliever in the playoffs, because he had
stretch. It's not a bad thought. I think they will monitor Severino's innings so that he would be able to be a starter in the postseason. But you can't use five guys anyway. And right now, you'd be hard-pressed to take one of those guys out. I mean, take a look at Tyone's numbers. They're really outstanding. So you've got Cortez, Gerrit Cole, Tyone, Jordan Montgomery, and Luis Severino. And the one that's been least effective in terms of winning has been Jordan Montgomery through no fault of his own. They just haven't scored for him. But he's pitched very, very well. All five starters have been really, really good. So these are problems for later on. And, you know, if he has an innings limit, you know, last year he pitched well out of the bullpen. So it could be him. Oh, it could be Montgomery. But things change. There's still 4 months of the season left. Let's go to Frank in Enfield. What's up, Frank?
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
Good.
this is the second time I've called you. The first time was back after the playoffs in football, and we discussed the NFL playoff situation, which you didn't agree with me, but that's okay.
All right.
I'm here to talk to you about Chapman. I've lost faith with him as being the closer. I really have. I mean, the Yankees come back in games, and he just gives it away when he comes in the ninth inning. Do you think he should be moved somewhere else and let someone else take a crack at being the closer?
Well, I mean, he hasn't pitched well. You know, even though he hasn't blown a save, he hasn't pitched well. He's lost tie games. He's given up runs in five straight innings. Right now he's on the IL with an Achilles tendonitis situation. Listen, the better closer is Holmes. And Don, we asked Boone yesterday, and Boone did everything but say he's not the closer anymore. He said,
right.
You know, he's going to match him in certain innings. I just don't think that Aroldis is as effective in other innings as he would be in the ninth. I don't think he gets up for the appearance the same way. It's going to be a balancing act because this guy in his mind is a closer. That's all he is. And Holmes seems to be much more amenable to pitching in other innings.
Yeah.
He said, whenever they give me the ball. But, you know, when push comes to shove and you've got to win big games down the stretch, if Holmes keeps pitching like this, how do you go to anybody else?
I don't have the stats in front of me, Michael, just by memory, by eye. He's not great in non-save situations.
No, he's not.
So,
a lot of closers aren't.
Right. So if he still has that mentality, so you stick him someplace else where there's not a save on the line, is he going to be like he is when you bring him in a 4-4 tie and is a no-save opportunity and he gets hit? When you were already admitting that you were in the territory of getting punched in the face by Aaron Boone.
Yeah.
I thought your next question was going to be stretching him out, making him a starter.
No, because he already answered that. He laughs at me. That one wouldn't be a punch. He'd laugh right in my face.
But you never asked him on the air. I thought you were going to ask him. I thought that's where you were going. But that might end up being the answer, you know, for wherever he goes. Because let's face it, I don't think he's coming back here.
I'd be so shocked.
It's just a matter of how you navigate through the rest of this season, whether he's going to be in a mop-up role or eventually get his job back. But at some point, that might be what he has to do in order to extend his career.
Well, I think that there'll be a closer's job out there for him somewhere. I don't know if he's going to get $16 million a year.
No.
But he can still close games because, as I mentioned, he hasn't blown a save. He just hasn't pitched great. And he's such a prideful guy. So I don't know how he would handle not being the closer. And how would he handle pitching in non-save situations? These are things that they don't show up in numbers. They're not in any spreadsheet. You really can't do an analysis on it because you don't know. All I know is, again, very proud guy.
Yeah. But
and I think his ego would really be struck taken out of the closer role.
But that's not a reason to keep him there.
No. But if you know he can't even, you know, if Holmes is there to bail him out and you know that there are times that he can go on a run because he's had these flat spots before, and you know Holmes is amenable to pitching in the seventh and eighth inning. I mean, what is Chapman if you take him out of the closer role? He's almost like, is he even a useful piece? That's my point.
No.
All right, Buck Showalter is going to join us in just a moment, manager of the Mets, so we're lucky to have him. Stick around right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Please get closer to the speaker right now.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Andrew's about to lose his mind.
Oh, no.
Since 3 o'clock, people are calling 1-800-919-ESPN to try to win Ranger tickets.
I will fight you after this show.
It's not that number.
Come on.
It's a different number. So you have to wait. And if you call before I say it, then you're not going to win anyway.
Nothing.
And Andrew's losing his mind. Clumps of hair falling out of his head. Donnie's really upset.
And he's such a nice guy, too. So
he's
it's really
such
hard to
a,
get
he's
his
a
goat.
He's a ray of sunshine. He really is.
But this is what I've seen this. I've seen this radio station destroy people emotionally.
Physically and financially, too.
And I don't want to see that happen to Andrew. And I don't want to see it happen on our watch.
So, Andrew, when you pick up one of those calls, what do you say to them? Do you get angry? I mean, how do you keep it together?
I'm very short, kind of stern in my tone. I just say that it's not the number. You got to wait. They'll tell you what it is.
And do they answer? You just hang up before they can answer.
They say, oh, okay, okay. And look, I love that they're into it and that they want to win so badly, but I just want them to follow directions.
That's it.
I'm a big rules guy. You know that.
Yep, absolutely.
Don, we're all concerned about you. You had a little bit of a flub on one of your reads, and we tried to like figure out what you said, and we can't. So let's see if we can all do it together.
Mm-hmm. We've got banks eager to lend.
Huh. Eager to lend. I stumbled on eager.
Unbelievable.
I was about to say easy, and I said eager. Right. It's not really hard to dissect. You guys got to do a better job than this.
Okay, good
really,
enough.
That was poorly executed.
Right.
It was a bad thought, mm-hmm. And believe me, there'll be other reads where I'll do a lot worse, but come on, you could do a lot better than that, right? Andrew, seriously, that's nothing.
No, you're right, you're right.
It sounded much worse live. Let's hear it again. Oh, wait, here it is, okay.
We've got banks eager to lend.
Look, he said it
sounded really great in stereo like that. That was awesome.
Yeah. Claude in Queens. What's up, Claude?
Hey, what's up, guys?
As a
young impressionable boy, Gilligan's Island had a stimulating effect on me.
Oh yeah,
I've never looked at
that
TV
part.
Women.
They got right.
I had never looked at TV women in that fashion before. It was like soft porn for an 8-year-old. But I was really calling about
between
Paula
that
O'Neil.
And I Dream a Genie, right?
But my memory doesn't go that far back. I was calling about Paul O'Neill and how he mentioned back in spring training. When he first got there and he saw all these Yankee legends just walking around, you know, that inspired him, motivated him to want to do, you know, add to whatever lore the Yankees have. I think that is the reason you sign Aaron Judge long term. You know, let them put a fat number on it and know that they're going to have him, you know, after his playing days are over. And who can say that a Judge, Stanton, and LeMahieu at spring training? How many guys is that going to motivate? You know, it'd be a pretty smart move for the Yankees to find a way to use these guys basically, you know, for the rest of their walking days.
Well, I mean, that's always the intent. I mean, the Yankees are really, really, really good at celebrating their past. And I think the Mets are doing a good job this year of doing it, having an old-timers day again, and I think that's important. I think it's important for the players to see. It's important for the fans to be able to celebrate their past. But, I mean, the reason you sign Aaron Judge is not so he can come back in spring training in 20 years.
No.
You sign it because he's a heck of a player.
Because you know what? You're not getting that from Derek Jeter now.
No.
I mean, you paid Derek Jeter for him helping you win championships. And if you thought, well, now we have a lifetime Yankee that's going to help be an ambassador for the sport, well, he went out and became part owner of the Marlins. And who knows what he's going to do in the future, but it doesn't look like Derek Jeter is going to be DiMaggio as far as like coming back here. Maybe he will at some point, but that's not why you pay somebody a ton of money.
I think that the players of this era made so much money that, I mean, you have to come back only if you really, really want to come back. You don't come back for the money. I mean, Andy Pettit comes back because he loves it. Doesn't need the money. Derek has so much money. Posada has money. Bernie has money, but, you know,
right.
Some of them show up, but from past eras, if you could make some money showing up, you can do that.
Right. But other guys have bigger ideals. Like Don Mattingly wants to be a manager.
Right.
And he wanted the Yankee job, didn't get it, so he's moved on, and now he's been a manager at a couple of different places. So I'm not saying that he won't come back one day, but right now he wants to do other things. You know, and that's there's nothing wrong with that. But right now, the Yankees are not going to give Aaron Judge money thinking, oh, 30 years from now, he's going to be able to come to Old Timers Day or be part. No, they're not thinking about that. They're thinking about what's going to help us win now.
Let's go to Ross.
Ross.
In Oyster Bay. Ross calls a lot. What's up, Ross?
How you guys doing? I'm with my daughter, Emma, and her friend Anastasia, and they're huge fans of the Michael Kay Show, and we're on our way to a soccer tournament in Manalapan.
Wow. Okay.
And they just wanted to say hello and give you a little something to say.
Okay. Emma and Anastasia.
We love the Michael Kay Show. We love the Michael Kay Show.
Thank you so much, guys.
That is cool.
Are you guys excited for your tournament?
Yeah. We're
going to
get first
seed. How old is Emma and Anastasia?
10.
Are you guys going to win?
Yeah, first place.
Love
again.
It. Love
the confidence.
I love
Thank
it, Ross.
You so
You've raised
guys.
A good child.
Good luck. Enjoy the weekend.
Oh, that's
Thanks
awesome. For that.
That was cool.
You can't wait to bring the twins to a sports tournament. I can know it. I know it.
Well, they got Taekwondo tomorrow. It's not a sports tournament, but they get trophies. They get stars that I appreciate.
I bet you Marco can kill a small like woodland animal right now.
Well, I don't want to see him do that.
But he's strong. He's, no, he's,
he,
can, he's
he can break a piece of wood.
There you go. There you go.
And he enjoys punching me, which is disturbing.
No,
I think it's
it'll
funny
only get
when
worse
he hurts me.
As he gets older and you get older. Let's go to Sam in the Hudson Valley. Hello, Sam.
Mike, Donnie, what's
Sam,
up, guys?
What's up?
Hey, listen, great show, great week. But I was wondering, Mike, you've been around, obviously, these players and coaches for a long time. And you mentioned the story when you were downstairs with Boone. Have you ever come, not to blows, but, you know, arguments, anything, you know, when they're listening to you on the radio or maybe in passing and somebody just wants to rip your face? Have you ever come across anything like that in your career?
It's a great question, Sam. I mean, I've had you know, talks with players. It's never gotten to the point where it becomes a screaming match. I think the toughest thing, you know, doing this show is tough because you're giving your opinions. On a game, you're just stating fact of what's happening. But I think the toughest thing is when family members or wives hear something you say, and then it becomes a game of telephone. And so they tell their husband what they think they heard you say, and that gets them angry, and then they'll confront you on it, and then you'll produce proof that that's not what you said. But for the most part, I mean, Don, think about it. I got this job announcing the Yankees in 92. And starting in 93, they never had a losing season. So I haven't had a lot to criticize. I mean, there are some players that are very sensitive that don't talk to me, but they never had a confrontation with me. They just don't talk to me because maybe right. they think I'm too critical. But, I mean, there's not much to be critical about on this team.
And in confrontation, that's that really is reserved for, like, something outlandish. Or...
Dear God, dear Shriad, it would be so fabulous to drop you.
I never had that.
Never had that.
All right, Andrew, are you ready?
Let's do it.
All right, Ranger fans, listen up. We're giving you a chance to be at Game 6 tomorrow at Madison Square Garden. Be caller number 6 right now at 888-987-ESPN. It's the contest line, 888-987-ESPN, and you could be there to see your blue shirts in action. We'll have one last chance to win coming up in the 6 p.m. hour. So please keep it locked in. The Rangers are in round 2 of the Stanley Cup playoffs, and MSG Networks has you covered. Watch pre- and post-game coverage with highlights, analysis, and exclusive team access before and after every single playoff game.
Yeah.
So whoever wins this, good luck, enjoy, and you know it's on us, and think of us when you go there. You know who we have to get there? I wonder if he's going to get there, Don. Pusick is as big a Ranger fan as any, but Anthony's amazing. He tweets during the game. He live tweets. That keeps me up to date. Anthony, you going to the game?
I don't plan on it. But I've been to plenty of games. I covered the team for a year when I was at Fordham. I was there for the step on overtime goal. I've had my fair share of great moments with the Rangers playoffs. I'd love to go. See if I can scrounge up the money to go.
Why can't we get you a press pass?
Yeah, you could always do that too. Yeah, I think that's how Dave got in.
Dave's a wonderful man.
He really is. Hockey yeah. show tomorrow at 7, me and him bright and early. Doing that?
Yeah, I got some issues with him.
What happened?
Me or Dave?
No, Dave.
Oh.
Last Friday, because they were playing, making Anthony stay all night waiting for the game to be over. Like, dude, don't overwork my guy. Who is he?
By the way, this is going to be an issue, Don.
Let's go with Don!
Andrew Baggerly of The Athletic.
Right, covers the Giants.
Right. He tweets out, Gabe Kapler told reporters in Cincinnati that he doesn't plan on coming out for the national anthem, and that will be his plan going forward, quote, until I feel better about the direction of our country. And Kapler wrote a long op-ed in one of the San Francisco papers today, saying how disappointed he is in the lack of movement, that no government officials seem to want to do anything about the gun problem and the killings that happened in Texas, and it disappoints him. And when he listens to the national anthem, that's not what the anthem's about. It's about making, you know, doing things for people. So we knew what all the kneeling did and how angry that got people. What's it going to be that a manager of a big league team is not going to come out for the national anthem?
Well, what's interesting is that when I heard it's strange, right? It's the same city in which Kaepernick was taking a knee. Weren't there people who said, well, then just don't come out for the anthem?
Yep.
What, you know, so isn't that better that he's not grandstanding? He's not going to take a knee. He's not, I have no problem with if he'd wanted to do that. But isn't that the, in some people's eyes, the better way? Just don't come out. I have zero problem with it, Michael. I mean, he's not feeling it. I mean, you can understand what's happening here. And if he just doesn't want to come out for it, that was kind of what people suggested Kaepernick should have done. So maybe he won't get criticized for it.
Yeah, but you know what? He's the only manager that won't be out for the national anthem. So it's going to be a thing. Just because he doesn't kneel, he's not coming out for the national. The leader of the team, it's going to be a big deal, Don. It's going to be a big deal. What do you think about it? 1-800-919-3776. It's Kay, LaGreca, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
More context on Gabe Kapler and him not standing for the anthem, or not even being out on the field. He said, I'm not okay with the state of this country. This is on ESPN. And he felt like a coward for not protesting the lack of delivery on the promise of what our national anthem represents. He does not plan on taking the field for the anthem until I feel better about the direction of the country. Now, he wrote a blog post that was published today. It wasn't in a newspaper. Said he was disappointed in himself for not making some sort of protest during the playing of the anthem Wednesday. He said, when I was the same age as the children in Uvalde, my father taught me to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance when I believe my country was representing its people well, or to protest and stay seated when it wasn't. I don't believe it is representing us well right now. Every time I place my hand over my heart and remove my hat, I'm participating in a self-congratulatory glorification of the only country where these mass shootings take place. On Wednesday, I walked out onto the field. I listened to the announcement as we honored the victims in Uvalde. I bowed my head. I stood for the national anthem, Metallica riffed on City Connect guitars. He said he wanted to make some sort of gesture, but he was conscious that it could be misunderstood as an act meant to be offensive to the military, to veterans, to themselves. This is a quote. My brain said drop to a knee. My body didn't listen. I wanted to walk back inside. Instead, I froze. I felt like a coward. I didn't want to call attention to myself. I didn't want to take away from the victims or their families. But I am not okay with the state of this country. I wish I hadn't let my discomfort compromise my integrity. I wish that I could have demonstrated what I learned from my dad, that when you're dissatisfied with the country, you let it be known through protest. The home of the brave should encourage this.
Well, seems very well thought out. Now,
he's
sure
a deep thinker. He is a deep thinker.
Yeah, and you know, he's going to do this. It's not in anybody's face. He doesn't want to go out there for the national anthem. Obviously, in the current climate, you can understand, even if you disagree, that he shouldn't do it that way. I think the one thing we learned in the 5 years since the Colin Kaepernick incident, Michael, that we need to be sensitive to what people think and what people feel about something. That flag represents all of us. And that's why you do what you want to do. And in a world, Michael, where a lot of broadcasts don't even air the national anthem because they want to take that minute and a half to sell commercial time, and in a world where people will decide to just go up and purchase nachos or go to the bathroom and be on their cell phone, or during the national anthem at a Dallas Stars game, scream stars when that lyric comes up, or red when that lyric comes up during a Capitals game or something. So we all seem to use the anthem in our own way. So if he chooses to use it in that way, you know, then he can do it. And I can stand for it if people want to. And if people don't want to, they can do that as well. I think we've kind of learned that this is a nation of free thinkers, and we should respect that.
I will tell you this. You know, I had that emotional open with Don and Peter the other day. And I think that for some reason I get the sense that this time the vast majority of Americans are not going to accept doing nothing. So the NRA had its convention today, and there were, huge amounts of protest outside, thousands of people. And, you know, I don't think it would be a bad idea for people to get together and march on Washington, because this cannot stand. It just can't. Something has to change, and nobody's taking away anybody's guns. That seems to be the default argument. Well, they want to take away my guns. No, no. We just want to make it a little bit more challenging to get a gun, where an 18-year-old, obviously with mental issues, is able to buy two AR-15s and all those rounds of ammunition, and not a red flag was put up? Not a red flag. And, you know, and some of the people that are saying, you know, you got to arm the teachers. Well, there were armed police outside that school, and they didn't want to go in because the quote was they didn't want to get shot. Because what chance does a police officer have against an AR-15? Now, think about the chance that a little 10-year-old has against that person. So that's one another option that Ted Cruz is saying, well, there should just be one door in and out of the school. Well, that doesn't seem like a fire hazard to me at all, right, Ted? So, I mean, there's got to be something else that can be done to help us get through this. And I think the tenor of this country is we are not going to sit back and just let it be status quo and hope it changes. Because if you keep doing the same thing over and over and expect something to change, really that is the definition of insanity. And what we're living right now, insane times.
Yeah, and if somebody wants to protest the anthem, then I think they're free to do that. Because there seems to be some kind of miscommunication or misconception, I should say, that if you're critical of your country, it means you don't love it. I look at it as maybe I love it even more. Because why can't I be critical of it? Why can't I not be happy with it? Does that mean that that I'm not patriotic, that I don't love my country, that I can have problems with aspects of it? I still think it's the greatest country in the world, but to sit here and say we don't have problems and to try to change that when we can in any way that we can, that's supposed to be what makes our country different than every other one. So if Gabe Kapler wants to do that, more power to him. Does that mean I would do it? No, I think I'd stand, and I'm free to do that. So if I learned anything from Kaepernick is that, you know, this blind loyalty we're supposed to have means that we don't get the chance to criticize it. And if we don't criticize it, Michael, then how do we change the bad?
It doesn't change. It doesn't change. You have to write letters to your local representatives and tell them that you are demanding change, that it has to be a central system to get approval to buy these sorts of weapons, to buy any gun. You should not have to buy a gun on a whim, because if you buy a gun on a whim, it's probably for the wrong reason. It's not because you saw a rabbit in your backyard. No, it's probably for the wrong reason. So give it a breath, take a couple of weeks, let people go through everything, psychological studies, whatever the case may be, and then let people decide whether or not you deserve to have a gun. An 18-year-old shouldn't have a gun when you have to be 25 years old to rent a car. Just saying.
And if a month from now or 2 months from now I turn on a Giant game and I notice that Gabe Kapler is not in the dugout and it reminds me of what happened earlier this week, good. We shouldn't forget. It shouldn't just become something that we move on from. So if nothing else, if Gabe Kapler's protest just reminds us that we still have a lot of work to do in that area, then some good can come from that. So,
and, you know, Don and I, Peter, we like to keep this show, as we say, the candy store, the toy store, because this is where you come to escape reality. But the fact that we said what we did a couple of days ago, Rich Eisen on the end of his show, which is on Peacock, he said what he did. Chris Russo on First Take said what he did. You know, we have to use these platforms for good. And I know you come here to talk about sports, and we do that. But if we can get attention for however many people that might be listening that are interested in this, then we're going to do it. Because I think there's some things more important than, like, staying in your lane. You know, shut up and talk sports. No.
Okay.
No, because, you know, there were 19 little kids that were killed and two people. And one of the women that were shot, her husband the next day died of a fatal heart attack, probably died of a broken heart. Mm-hmm. And now there are four children without parents. So, yeah, I'm going to talk about it. Don's going to talk about it. Peter's going to talk about it, because these are things that can change. This is not unfixable. It doesn't happen in other countries.
And these things spill into sports, Michael, because sports figures have opinions, because they're Americans and they feel. So the whole idea of staying your lane, this is staying in our lane, because it's in everybody's lane.
I'm an American. That's my lane.
That's it. Exactly.
Sorry.
We obviously did not suffer the way those families did, but we feel their pain, and, you know, the way things are going right now, who's to say tomorrow and it's not us? So it affects all of us. So stay in your lane. That I think that's exactly what we're doing.
All right, we'll have some fun with Ian and Andrew filling in for the vacationing Peter Rosenberg, so that'll be in just a moment right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.